you know, and I know a lot of rich people, but yet every real estate guy online has a Ferrari. Like, it's bullshit. Real estate people don't have Ferraris because usually we're savvy investors who understand the value of a dollar, and a Ferrari is a horrible depreciating asset. Like, you buy it and you lose boatloads of money. You can't even fit in it. Like, how do you haul your damn groceries? So it's just stupid.
That was my guest today, Joe Calloway. We get into it about real estate investing, his humble beginnings, and how his patience contributes to the opportunities that he now has access to. It's an amazing conversation about patience, about avoiding BS gurus, and much, much more. This, like every episode of the show, is brought to you by the Going Deep Summit, January 27th. Tickets are going fast. We have an amazing lineup of speakers, including Leia Lizarondo, Zach Slayback, Ed Lattimore, Dan Bull. You want to go over to goingdeepwithaaron.com/event to check that out and get information about tickets. They are going fast. But without further ado, here is my conversation with Joe Calloway.
You're listening to Going Deep with Aaron Watson.
So Joe, thank you so much for coming on my podcast. I really appreciate you allowing me to come into your office here.
Well, thank you for coming down. We appreciate what you're doing and getting the good word out in the community.
Yeah. Speaking to this community where we're located, we're in Allentown. About like 35-40% of listeners are from Pennsylvania, but we have people who listen in from all over the world. So they might not necessarily be aware of what Allentown is, but it's just south of Pittsburgh. And I wanted to kind of start off a little bit by giving you the opportunity to talk a little bit about Allentown, why it is that you're stationed here as opposed to somewhere else, and what maybe has attracted you to the area.
All right, great. Well, the first and foremost, I grew up in the area, so I grew up a few blocks away. Allentown is a neighborhood in Pittsburgh. It's not Allentown, PA. It's Allentown, Pittsburgh. It's a neighborhood which is just about a mile or two south of city center. This neighborhood is extremely well positioned. It's close to city center. It has a lot of great access points. It has a great commercial district. And I'm a real estate investor. So as real estate goes, you want to have a good commercial district. You want to have good access points. You want to be close to this business district. It has all the keys, but it also had a lot of distress. Pittsburgh had a lot of distress over the last 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. And now Pittsburgh's on a rebound. But the South communities of Pittsburgh still struggle. Growing up in this community, I ultimately wanted to not just develop where the dollar took me, but develop something close to my heart. And I was a kid who played basketball right next to where we're recording for the local Catholic youth organization. I was baptized next door. My mom went to the bakery that used to be down the street. So the bank on the corner, which is now the police station, was my mom's bank. And I used to get gumballs out of the machine. So it's a very local investment strategy that has deeper meaning than just the overall profitability of the actual real estate investment.
And it is right by downtown Pittsburgh. Like I live in the North Hills, and it's like a 15-minute drive or something just to kind of get into the city. And we basically hop out the door here, ride down the hill, and you are across the bridge from downtown Pittsburgh.
One mile, by the way the bird flies, from downtown Pittsburgh. We are sitting in this community that's ripe with activity, but oftentimes overlooked by other real estate investors.
So I want to get more into the weeds on that, about why it might be overlooked and how you uncover value or uncover opportunities. But before we jump into that, I want to start back with your story in its nascent stages. You grew up here, you were raised here. Not everyone that you grew up with necessarily has been buying real estate here and investing here. So can you take us back to how you got started? I mean, your company now owns over 250 properties, but that had to start with one property at some point. So can you take us back to your first dipping the toe into real estate investing?
Okay. Well, I grew up in Mount Oliver, which is a community right next door where we're at. That was where my mom's apartment was. We were a low-income family, single-parent home, all the kid in poverty stories. I can go on and on. But I went to the military directly out of high school. I didn't have a lot of opportunity. I didn't perform well in high school. So I went to the military. The military did a lot of great things. It's an amazing organization for leadership and learning, but it also gave me a small monetary bonus, which amounted to a few thousand dollars. when I was getting out of the military, I saved that and you know, saved it properly and saved my money as I was in the military. And I used this bonus to buy the first house that I bought, which was directly across the street from my mom's house at this point in this very neighborhood. This house was a owner-occupied house that I lived in, and I rented it to a friend of mine who was going to rent an apartment. I said, just come live with me, be my roommate. And that friend in return basically paid for my mortgage payment and half the utility. So I lived for free. Pretty cool idea. I replicated it and kept doing it over and over again, taking this very small amount of money and then using real estate strategy to take on the next investment and continuing to turn it into where we sit today.
Was there a point though where you made the decision of, hey, this is nice, like I'm not paying my mortgage, that's convenient, to I want to really scale this and turn this into something bigger? Was there a moment that happened, or how did that come to be?
I think when in real estate, when you pencil it out and you go, I have one property, it's making me $400. If I had 100 properties, that makes a lot of sense. That's something that a lot of real estate investors, including myself, got caught up in. But along the way, it was much more challenging. So when I was seeing that moment, it wasn't like I'm driven towards that, because frankly, it was much more challenging to scale this I buy houses and rent them strategy. There were a lot of bumps along the way, including having to take odd jobs and I had a construction company. I had an eBay selling business back when that was cool. I had Joe Can Help Handyman Solutions. That was one of my first businesses where I literally unclogged people's toilets or hanged pictures or cut people's grass for $25, whatever I could do to make money. But I continued to hustle, and I continued in the real estate game buying houses slowly. So it wasn't necessarily from day one this strategy just took off and I focused on it. I was from I don't have a silver spoon. I didn't have these things that a lot of real estate investors have. They have a father who has a lot of money, so they have they cannot make money for many years.
So you weren't Trump.
I was not. I was definitely not Donald Trump. I did not have anyone to help me.
Yeah.
So I had to make money, and I had, you know, a few years later, I have now my wife and a daughter on the way. Well, that was many years. I have three girls now. So,
awesome.
But during this time, this was around 2007 and 2008. I was buying. I saw the vision. I wanted to do it, but entrepreneurship is not this overnight success. My overnight success has taken me, you know, from 2005 until 2017. So this overnight success in 2008, 2009 looked like, okay, I have some properties. They're not making any money. I'm going to go and clog this person's toilet, and then I'm going to cut this person's grass, and then I'm going to put in job applications to try to get a real job because I need to bring home some bacon so I can feed my family. So I was going to school. I was doing so many different things, and I think that's a common myth in entrepreneurship, is that we're so focused. And if you're a real entrepreneur, I hear this all the time, you're so focused on that nothing can get in your way. Well, the real world of entrepreneurship, when you don't have a rich daddy, is when what gets in the way is I have to feed my family. I have to make money. I need $100 to put gas in my truck. I think that's the real entrepreneurial way. That's how most bootstrappers do it. So this idea that you're focused 100% of the time on entrepreneurship is nonsense. Most entrepreneurs have to take side jobs, side hustles, and make money while they're building their empire.
Yeah. And you're really talking about these two constraints that are the fundamental two constraints, time and money to building anything. Mm-hmm. And one of the kind of questions, you know, I said earlier, 250 properties now, starting in this very piecemeal approach. Money is a constraint as you're adding more properties. There's down payments. There's just an upfront cost that happens with adding more properties to your portfolio. And there's basically two routes that one can take to continue adding. You can earn the money yourself and have sole ownership, or solicit private investors to back you and join you in some of these deals. One of the things that you have a YouTube channel, RE Investor Professor, and you talk about that being a part of the journey for many real estate investors who don't have the silver spoon. Can you talk about making that decision, or how one should weigh making that type of decision to solicit another investor to join you?
Yeah, I mean, in any finance or business world, money rules. So if you have money, things can get done. If you don't, it does not get done. So you have to make a decision. Do you want to scale and you have money? Maybe you're lucky enough to have someone who will just give you the money because they love you. But if you don't, then you have to make a tough decision. But the reality of it is, it's not a tough decision. It's, do I do it with someone else's money and share in that wealth, or do I not do it? Because 100% of zero is zero. So you have to solicit money. And the real power in real estate is in, do you have money? Do you have that nut at the very beginning of your career to be able to sustain something that is a very long-term investment? So you have to sell. If you don't have money, you have to figure out how to get it. And people always say, well, Joe, how do you come up with this money? Where'd you get it from? Did you have all these connections? No, I grew up in a very poor area. I didn't have a lot of connections. I went to public schools. I didn't go to an Ivy League school. I went to the military as an enlisted person. I went out there and I found it, and I knocked on doors and I convinced people to give it to me. So you have to have that access to capital. How you get it, that's up to you. But you will not start a business without access to capital. You will not scale a business, a real business, something that actually makes a difference in your life, your employees' life, your family life, your investors' life, without access to capital, because stuff costs money.
Another illusion that people have is they walk into a beautiful office like this, they hear these numbers that we've put out and say, oh, Joe's made it. There's nowhere else for him to go, or he has no problems in his day-to-day basis. But the reality is that entrepreneur never stops facing constraints. So you referenced money being the condition before. Is that still the constraint for you, or what constraints do you face now in a different stage of your career?
So money isn't a constraint. Not that I have, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in the bank account, but I have a lot of people who believe in me, and I have phone calls away from getting those millions of dollars that I need. Yeah. But that was something I established by performing for my investors. I'm their customer. I treat them well. They make money and they take my calls. Now I have fixed that problem of no money. And then as you scale, it becomes, how do you find the talent to be able to carry out your entrepreneurial visions? And more than this, the talent, how do you find the person who's willing to put in the time, the energy, and effort and perform like an entrepreneur? A long day is not 8 to 10 hours in early stage startup entrepreneurship. You need to put in tons of times, tons of sweat, stress, all these things. How do you find that person? Because an average employee doesn't build your business. You take care of your employees because they're important to your business, but these intrapreneurs or entrepreneurs who are internal to an existing company are the key to scaling. How do you find that? I have no idea. You keep looking, you keep trying, and eventually you stumble into them. I don't have a recipe for that. If I did, this would be a $1 billion company, because talent and human capital at this point is more important than money or the traditional capital.
Another constraint that I maybe didn't acknowledge when I said time and money is also just knowledge, expertise, domain expertise. And in the trailer for your YouTube channel, I saw you wanted to start giving advice to people about real estate investing because you are, quote, tired of the bullshit. Mm-hmm. And I've had some other folks on, listeners might not actually know this, I've done more real estate interviews than I've actually published, because after conducting the interview, I sat back with it and I was like, something was off. Like, I didn't know. I couldn't like point to a specific thing, but something about my nose and my gut said there was something below the surface there that I just didn't get to, and I didn't feel comfortable necessarily putting my name next to that. But as someone who has not only accomplished success, but is interested in sharing your expertise and what you've learned with other people, what is some, if you can be specific, some of the bullshit or bad advice that you see spouted that someone like me who doesn't have the real estate investing experience might not necessarily be aware of?
Anything, and this is real estate business in general, get rich quick, rich overnight, rich within a year. I made $2 million my first year starting out with $0, usually is complete bullshit. It doesn't happen. We always hear these stories of overnight successes because they're interesting, they're amazing, but it's like hitting the lottery. You know, everyone thinks of an entrepreneur as Mark Zuckerberg, but an entrepreneur is the baker. We have these myths, and then people sell this crap online and perpetuate that myth of $1 million in a year. My first course, I have the binder somewhere in this office because I keep it. And I actually use it as my portfolio. It's called $5 million net worth club or something like that. I took this course that cost a lot of money to a broke GI coming out of the Navy. I paid for it. Gave me some good advice, but it was really selling this, making $5 million within a year, like $5 million in a year. Wow, that's great. They pump you up and they make you happen, but it's just not realistic. If it sounds too good to be true, it is. All this stuff is hard work. The guy in front of the Ferrari, I know like two people with Ferraris, you know, and I know a lot of rich people, but yet every real estate guy online has a Ferrari. Like, it's bullshit. Real estate people don't have Ferraris because usually we're savvy investors who understand the value of a dollar, and a Ferrari is a horrible depreciating asset. Like, you buy it and you lose boatloads of money. You can't even fit in it. Like, how do you haul your damn groceries? So it's just stupid. So then this person's perpetuating this myth of entrepreneurship in real estate is all about fancy things and wristwatches and cars. Why do you have a wristwatch when you have a cell phone? No one has wristwatch or big diamondy watch. They're for rappers and all of these people pitching these BS courses. I hate that. It's stupid. But people buy into it. One of the problems RE Investor Professor has is that we get told, and we've tried it, you have to be salacious. You have to sell BS. People want to see you in your lifestyle. My lifestyle is good. I live a great life, far beyond that I could ever imagine when I was a broke kid. But the things that I like are like going to Disney World with my kids, or, you know, going out to eat and not having to worry about it. Like little basic things. That's entrepreneurs. Those are entrepreneurs. And it's bullshit. So they sell these ideas that you can get rich quick in real estate. It doesn't happen. You know, it tells you that they did it. They didn't do it. It's complete BS. They see the idea of selling you a $500 course across the nation times 10,000. That's a pretty nice number. And people do it. But what they don't do, these people don't actually do real estate deals. Anyone who does a real estate deal and does anything to scale, if you can't Google them and the local press isn't covering them, they're liars. They're liars. I can't not be in the press. I can't stay out of the press because I do so many deals and people want to know, why the hell is this guy buying up all these properties? But yet this guy who's saying he's doing $100 million of deals a year, I can't Google him and find anything other than he sells some bullshit book. So that's get rich quick, get rich overnight. Any sophisticated real estate investor will tell you, number one, you get rich in real estate by growing old. So it takes a long time. But you get really rich in real estate by growing old if you do it right. It's a wealth builder. Most million and billionaires hold their majority of their net worth in real estate. You know, so it makes a lot of sense, but it's not an overnight thing.
Yeah. And it's also a factor. So you talked about that course that you had and that you paid for $5 million a year. Mm-hmm. And there's different forms of paying for the lesson that it doesn't work that way. Yeah. You can pay for the lesson by dropping what was a relatively large amount at the time, seeing through it or getting into the weeds with it, seeing it didn't really work that way, and now you have that lesson. But there's other ways to go about learning that lesson that can be a little bit more painful.
Yeah, 100%. That course was $3,000 or $4,000. Then the follow-on course was $20,000+. I sort of piggybacked. I found someone else who was paying for the 20 grand. They could take a guess. So I said, just take me. I'm broke. Will you help me out? And they did. It was nice of them. And I learned good information. But overall, I wasn't a $5 millionaire in overnight. So that was costly. So I learned good information in some of these courses, but they sell it to you because no one wants to hear Joe Calloway lost $10,000 the first year in real estate. And then the second year he made $2,000, and that was from cutting people's grass. Like that's not sexy to people.
Yeah.
But what I did do at that time, I scaled 10 units. Those 10 units now today are probably worth $1 million. I've paid down my mortgages, so I probably have $400,000 of equity in those units over that time. And they make me each $400 to $700 a month, every single month. And I haven't seen these units in 3 or 4 years. So it's a pretty cool thing. I lost your question in all that talking.
No, you just built off of me beautifully, and I have another question that I'm raring to ask you. So we've had other people in the world of finance come on, and there's every financial philosophy or perspective under the sun if you search hard enough for it. But the one that is perhaps most broadly understood is the value of diversification. If you are completely in tech stocks and for whatever reason the tech industry tumbles, your entire portfolio gets wiped out. So you want to diversify to protect yourself, yada, yada, yada. I'm speaking obvious truisms to most people. I haven't necessarily heard anyone in real estate talk about that being a key to success or like an important consideration. And so given that your RE360 brand and just even your name is so synonymous with Allentown and being tied to that, how do you think about diversification when it comes to your real estate holdings, whether that's within different neighborhoods of Pittsburgh, cities other than Pittsburgh? Like, how do you think about diversification?
Okay. So I would start, I'm going to sort of ad lib on that a little bit.
Sure.
The idea of diversification oftentimes is another bullshit myth. Like, not diversification. Someone's like, no, it's not. You're an idiot. No. But what happens is that there's people selling mutual funds and selling their particular product class. You should have life insurance that you know, builds an annuity. Like, yeah, that's great, but it's a horrible returning investment over the lifetime of that. So why don't I just have a life insurance policy that pays me if I kick the bucket and I'm not going to invest in your stupid product? That person's going to say, well, then you're not diversified in this particular product. So I think in the financial industry, which is a extremely just sales-oriented industry, that diversification thing is there to make sure people are buying their products, which I don't agree with. I think my diversity as a real estate investor, especially a young, I'm relatively young in this game, I have a lot of time. So if I lose everything tomorrow, I'll still be all right. I'll start another business and I'll move on. I'll get a job. So I would rather right now, when I'm coming up, this would be to young entrepreneurs or people who understand that risk equals reward. I'm not going to diversify one of my dollars and make 4% when I could be making 20%+ plus fees and all these other great things about real estate and build this big, big business because I'm not diversified in some crap mutual fund that eventually the stock market blows up every single, you know, decade or so, and then everyone loses all their money. When my real estate blows up, what's going to happen? I can't sell my properties, but then people rent my properties, and my rents actually, as we come out of that downturn, my rents actually spike because people aren't buying anymore and everyone's renting. So it's almost counter-cyclical that if I would diversify and everything takes a hit, as long as I can last 9 months and a lot of perceived issues within the market, and as long as I don't go ahead and panic and think the sky's falling, my rents are going to come back up. Yeah. So long-winded answer, but I think that diversification thing, especially if this is a young audience out there who's trying to build a business and you have 20 grand to your name and you're going to take 10 grand and sit it on the sidelines in some mutual fund when you should be investing that in one of the best assets, which is you, your business, it doesn't make sense to diversify. I will diversify in the next few years because I have enough money to do that. But when you're trying to build a business, you got to take risk. And if you can't take risk because you're worried about diversification and half your money's on the sidelines because your financial advisor is convincing you to leave your money in this, you know, savings bond account that's making you 1.2%. Are you worth 1.2% while you're out there hustling? I'll park my money somewhere eventually. But while I'm hustling, no one can deliver me the return that I can generate. And no one on Wall Street, no financial advisor cares about my money or my investors' money like I do. So screw diversification for young entrepreneurs. As you get older, obviously it makes sense.
Yeah. I love that answer. Let's get a little more micro and talk about how, like you said, everything you buy, you end up in the press. Is that always kind of around Allentown? Is that other parts of Pittsburgh? Is that outside of Pittsburgh? Like, how do you decide where to invest? Because another thing I've heard is invest what you know. So don't follow some song because this condo complex in Florida is going to be the bomb, but I've never been to Florida. So that's an extreme example, but talk to me a little bit about how you think about that.
Right. So diversification, why I don't want to, there's a lot of small time real estate investors, and I see this, and they buy a house in like Phoenix and they live in Pittsburgh because, and then they say, well, I want to diversify. That's not diversification. That's stupidification. That's stupid. You can't control that asset. You have a couple hundred grand of assets and you're worried about diversification. You need to be worried about managing your assets. And you can't manage assets that are spread out all across the world. You can't be an expert at everything. You know, jack of all trades, master of none. But I can be an expert in certain areas. And when I say areas, I know Pittsburgh well. I know Western Pennsylvania well. I know some other areas from my commercial real estate experience back in the day. However, I can focus on this little tiny area that I could basically tell you what a house is worth. If we looked out the window and you pointed to it, I'd tell you how much it was worth without going inside of it. That kind of knowledge translates to big returns in value. You can't have it when you're all across the city, all across the state. So small-time investors, which most of us are, including me, you know, our portfolio is about 40 million bucks or so. That's relatively small. And that 40 million is concentrated within a mile or two from where we sit. So if a bomb blast hits this area, I got a problem. But guess what? We all do. If the entire market tanks, I got a problem. But I'll get back on the horse and ride again. But that's so unlikely based on I'm making such solid investments with huge margins because my boots are on the ground. I'm gaining so much value every time I buy because I'm so local and I can drill down and I can get the best deals and then I can manage it. If one of my houses have a leak, we're there. Minutes. If it's in Albuquerque, I may not know about it until the house is fully underwater.
That's badass. And I've heard that exact notion from people where their second or third property is just out in Timbuktu. I don't know how they manage that or how they have any of that information. You talked about commercial in a past life. Are you primarily in single and multifamily units now? How do you diversify or how do you choose what to invest in regards to that?
We're actually buying a lot more commercial. I worked for a company when I got out of grad school. I worked for two or three years in commercial real estate, working for a company as their director of real estate. So we've always dabbled in it, and we have a bunch of warehouses. Like this is actually a warehouse that we're sitting in. It's not an office. It's just our office at the top of it. We have a bunch of warehouses. We're buying stuff all over the Tri-County area, warehouses, we're looking at office buildings. We're taking on any deal that makes sense because we figured out that we're very creative and we can take on deals and turn problem assets into profitable assets very easily using our brain, our boots, our sweat equity, and we're scaling into bigger assets. But we have a great reputation. We have a lot of people who want to give us money. We're also not stupid, so we're not going to go and try to take on the next huge office building development that's a $50 million building, which we may or may not be able to do successfully. But that's risk I don't want to take. I want to scale slowly. So now we're buying $1 million to $5 million commercial properties. We're still buying residential properties because we know them well. It's a process. Business is about building processes and making it a machine. And the residential side of this business, sometimes I don't even see the properties we buy anymore because my team is buying them, renovating them, renting them. So that's the machine that will continue to go no matter what. But we are moving into the commercial side because the margins aren't as big. We can make a lot more percentage. You know, a percentage return is huge on these residential properties. But we also can't allocate $1, $5, $10 million on single family properties that we're buying for $40,000 and putting $10,000 to $20,000 into them. So that takes a lot to put $5 million at. That may be one or two transactions in the commercial world, but our margins will go down. There'll still be a very healthy, profitable return. But then we'll control those assets, and back to getting rich by growing old. If we buy those assets, own those assets, what's going to happen? It's going to start paying them down. That's why you eventually go into commercial estate, not because it's technically it's not more profitable, but it's more scalable.
Gotcha. Well, I have learned a ton from talking with you, Joe. I really appreciate you taking the time to educate me and the audience on all these matters. As we aim towards wrapping up here, is there anything that you were hoping to get the chance to say that I didn't give you?
No, I'm here for the conversation.
Awesome. Well, if people want to learn more about you and don't want some asshole standing in front of a Ferrari giving them real estate advice, where can people go to learn more?
The website's www.reinvestorprofessor.com. Same thing on YouTube, same thing on Facebook. We put a lot of our content out through Facebook. We put a video out every single week. It's free content. We're building some other course content. We have some other stuff. We have an 80, 90 series RE Investor Professor that goes through different topics, covers them in 3 to 5 minutes. That's all on Facebook or YouTube. You can check that out.
Awesome. Well, we'll be sure to link to that in the show notes. GoingDeepWithAaron.com/podcast is going to be the place to find that for this and every episode of the show. But as we do at the end of every episode, Joe, I want to give you the mic one final time to issue an actionable personal challenge for the audience.
When we were talking and originally, you were saying how like you were misled originally during college. And I felt like that way. I felt that way when I was getting my MBA. The way colleges work is they put you in a couple different jobs that usually suck. And then if you're thinking, are there other opportunities, you can't get into those if you're going through your guidance office. So I would like people to take the challenge upon themselves that don't rely on your traditional sources. If you're unhappy with your current job, if you're unhappy with your current business, if you're in school looking for the next big thing, you have to go down there and kick down the door and create your own position. It's going to be less profitable initially. It's going to be harder to get inside. People are not going to want to talk to you. But if you keep going in and kicking down the door, eventually they will. And then you'll be in that job that you actually want, not some corporate level position that if you died at your desk, it may take them 48 hours to actually realize you're dead. They don't even realize your job's not getting done. They just realize it's starting to stink in the room. So what I'm saying is, here's a challenge. If you're not happy, go out there and change it. Don't change it by going on monster.com. Pick the place you want to work for and go down there and say, I want to work for you, and tell them why. Or go out there and start your own business and start doing it on the side or at nights. You don't have to, you can keep your job and start businesses. You don't have to just do it 100%. You don't have to go all in. Another entrepreneurial myth. So go out there and actually change something. Don't sit there and wait for the resource to tell you, because our resources are crap. Make your own resource that works.
I dig it. I have mixed feelings about my degree in economics, but one thing, is that I've learned since getting that degree is it goes well beyond the financial reward for whatever action it is. You talked about earning less from the start, but what doesn't really ever get quantified is the psychic reward of the choices that you make and the positions you put yourself in, and the psychic reward that comes from deciding I'm going to be there and getting there is worth a lot of unquantifiable money, I'd say.
Yes, sir.
This has been great. We just went deep with Joe Calloway. Hope everyone out there has a fantastic day.
Hey everyone, hope you enjoyed today's episode. Hit subscribe if you've not already done so, and get excited for our next episode with Scott McTaggart. He hosts another Pittsburgh podcast called Pitchworks and is a master of perfecting the pitch, sales training, and the basics of getting your product into other people's hands in exchange for money. We did a back-to-back pod, so one is going to be going up on Pitchworks, one is going to be going up on my show, and we're going to have links available for both of those, but make sure you check it out and tune into all future episodes of Going Deep with Aaron Watson.
Thanks for listening. Connect with Aaron on Twitter and Instagram at AaronWatson59.